whatever that actually means. Active anyway, so we should get some good data. Narang patted him on the shoulder.
Good. Text me the moment they're done, if I'm not hovering over your shoulder at the time, of course.
With a smile, she turned and left. Her next stop was the lab, where doctors were studying the images of Ivan's internal structures. A certain number of scientists on Earth and in near space had been read in on the situation and were teleconferencing with the local staff. The lab was a madhouse of yelling and gesturing, as remote and local personnel argued over, well, pretty much everything. Most of the internal structures hadn't even been identified. In a couple of cases, structures had disappeared between successive scans. It seemed the nanites could reconfigure to meet changing requirements. Narang watched two scientists full-on yelling at each other over some arcane point, complete with waving hands and shaking fists. She would have feared the possibility of violence, except that whenever they paused for breath, both participants settled into smiles of happiness. Great days for science. For Ivan Pritchard, not so much. Narang shook her head and headed for the conference room.
"Morning, all,"
Narang said as she came through the door. A chorus of "mornings" drifted back. She grabbed a cup of tea and sat down at the head of the table.
"So, what do we have?"
Dr. Samuelson, seated to her left, spoke first, around a mouthful of donut.
"There's no doubt that Ivan Pritchard as a biological entity is gone. The Ivan Pritchard in isolation is 100% nanites, so I think any question of curing him has to be put to rest. There is no him left."
Dr. Narang nodded, then looked to the next person around the table. Dr. Noelia Sandoval had a faraway look in her eyes as she began her report.
"Ivan's internal structure is amazing. It's got a frame. I hesitate to call it a skeleton since it only superficially resembles the human skeletal system, and something that performs the function of muscles, although again, only generally similar in placement and function to the human equivalent."
"Why have a skeleton and muscles at all?" Dr. Nakamura asked. "Why not just morph into whatever posture he wants?"
"Too slow, for one thing,"
Sandoval answered.
"Plus, I don't think it would look natural. And that appears to be very important to whatever converted Ivan." "Explain, please,"
Narang said.
"Well, the entity, AI, whatever, converted Ivan in such a way that he is shaped like a human being. He can smile, his biceps bulges when he flexes his arm. You can see quadriceps outlines on his thighs. Remember the day we first saw him as he walked off the elevator? He looked and behaved completely human, except for the metal skin. Why? There is absolutely no reason to slavishly emulate the human form like that, unless it is an explicit requirement. Again, why? You have a theory, Dr. Sandoval?"
"Just speculation, Dr. Narang, but I think the whole purpose of the transformation assumes some degree of continuing to deal with the natives. If he wasn't quite human-like, if he fell into the uncanny valley of looks or behavior, it could be counterproductive."
"So,"
Narang mused.
"It's a marketing thing."
Sandoval grinned.
"I wouldn't have put it like that, but yes."
"That's just freaky,"
Nakamura muttered.
"Hell," Samuelson interjected. "That's not the freakiest part by a considerable margin."
All heads turned to look at him. Samuelson waved a pastry for emphasis.
"You've read the report of the original incident. How long was that artifact there? 100 years? 1,000? 1,000,000? There's a very good chance that when the artifact was created, human beings as a species didn't exist. For that matter, apes might not have split off from the old world monkeys yet. The stuff that infected Ivan Pritchard was encountering what was to it a totally new species of a totally new biology, with totally unknown behaviors and physical requirements, and within 24 hours, it had figured out how to convert him to metal in such a way that he was not only unharmed, but actually kept in perfect health. It figured out how his brain worked and how to emulate it so that Ivan continued to be Ivan. And it figured out, at the same time, how to emulate all physical functionality well enough to reassure other members of the same species that we are still dealing with one of our own. From scratch, people.
Samuelson shook his head slowly.
We are so far out of our depth. We're less than ants in this metaphor. What in hell are we up against?
In the silence that followed, Dr. Narang began humming Also Sprach Zarathustra, earning her puzzled looks from the others.
Philistines.
39. The Continued Threat. Admiral Moore came into the room last, as befitted his rank and standing. The others stood, muttered greetings, then they all sat.
"Sirs," he said, "let's review."
On cue, Lieutenant Bentley put images up on the holotank and wall screens. Various views of Ivan Pritchard and of the nanites cycled through the displays. The sequence ended with the internal scan of Ivan Pritchard, which even a non-medical professional could see did not resemble the internal structure of a human being. Moore looked around the table.
Items. One. All of the other crew are coming up clean. Dr. Narang is not willing to make any definitive statement before all tests are complete, but privately, she has admitted that she doesn't expect to find anything. The nanites simply appear to be completely uninterested in anyone but Ivan Pritchard.
He tapped the table twice before continuing.
Two. There's nothing special about Pritchard. He was simply the first person to touch the anomaly. Otherwise, we have to assume that the anomaly somehow arranged for the right person to be there first. I don't believe in chosen-one scenarios, gentlemen. Therefore, the anomaly just wanted someone, and now is sticking with its choice.
Three taps.
Three. Ivan Pritchard is no longer human. Dr. Narang has determined definitively that there is no human tissue anywhere in his body. He claims to still be Ivan, but he could be an alien AI, or even a copy of an alien intelligence. How can we judge what can and can't be done by whoever made those...
Moore swept an arm to indicate the AQRI image of the nanites.
Things.
Commodore Gerard swiveled his chair to face Moore.
In case you're suggesting what I think you're suggesting, that'll be a very hard sell. Pritchard doesn't have to prove that he's human. He was human a couple of months ago. He has a birth certificate, a family, he pays taxes. It's up to you to prove that he isn't. And he's got enough money to throw lawyers at us for the rest of forever.
Yes, Moore conceded. And his crewmates won't let it drop if he just disappears. And they can't just disappear thanks to Captain Jennings's metaphorical dead man switch. Unfortunately, we are potentially faced off against people who are rich, intelligent, have had weeks to think things through, and have seen enough bad movies to automatically see us as the enemy.
Given what you're not quite suggesting, Ted, they may be right on that last point.
Moore snorted.
I'm not suggesting anything definite yet, Michael.
He looked around the table.
I am suggesting that Pritchard, as a problem, is not going to go away, and I feel confident in predicting that we won't be turning him back into a human being. You read the reports. Those things evaporated him. We will, at some point, have to make a decision about him, regardless of your political or moral stance. I want you all to start thinking about this. Consider especially the uncomfortable scenarios, because those are the ones that will require hard decisions. The easy ones are, well, easy.
Around the table, frowns and pursed lips showed that he'd scored a hit. Admiral Castillo leaned forward and straightened the papers in front of him. Moore spent a moment admiring the move, a classic piece of upstaging. Without uttering a word, Castillo had all attention focused on him.
Sirs, Admiral Moore has the right of it, but I'm going to suggest we should take it further. It may be in the fullness of time that we will conclude that Pritchard is not a threat. But right now we don't know that. I'd like to see us prepare for the worst-case scenario.
What do you have in mind, Admiral?
Commodore Gerard kept a carefully neutral tone, but Moore could see the tension in his jaw. A quick flip through his papers and Castillo held up a thick stapled bundle.
We had discussed a fail-safe option early in this process. Narang kicked up too much of a fuss, but perhaps it's time to resurrect the plan. This is a proposal for a nuclear failsafe. Attached to the isolation module, it would guarantee that we could completely remove any threat should one materialize.
A nuke?
Gerard shook his head.
In Earth orbit. Imagine the reaction if we actually detonated it. And by the way, these are civilians, Admiral.
I'm not implying they are guilty of anything,
Castillo replied,
except being in the wrong place at the wrong time. However, in the worst case, we could be facing a species-ending threat. Under those circumstances, I will push the button myself, even if I'm personally within the blast radius. And if we do detonate, it will be for good reason.
Moore rubbed his eyes with thumb and forefinger, then looked up.
Gentlemen, I did say uncomfortable scenarios, didn't I?
He looked around the table.
Let's break and take some time to think about this. We'll meet tomorrow and continue this discussion.
The others nodded, and one by one they filtered out of the conference room. Soon only Castillo and Moore remained at the table.
Well, Alan, you really took that and ran with it.
Moore reached over and pulled the stapled set of sheets toward him.
I find it interesting that you had this ready.
Castillo shrugged.
My job, Ted.
Yours too, as it happens. Oh, meow. Not everyone immediately invokes nuclear threat.
Moore slid the sheets back toward Castillo.
Nevertheless, I take the point. I'll give this serious consideration.
Castillo sat back and looked directly at Moore.
If this is what we think it is, extraterrestrial in origin, then it's particularly galling that the ICDC is in charge. I wonder if there's some way to invoke emergency powers or something.
I have, in fact, considered this. I've had some sub rosa discussions upslope. No one is happy with the ICDC's apparent refusal to consider strategic issues. But right now it's acting like a disease, and like it or not, Narang and her crew are in charge.
Moore paused.
However, their mandate is well defined. At some point they will wrap up and leave. Then things may change, and we may be revisiting this whole topic.
I'm surprised you're so unconcerned about the lack of a well-defined chain of responsibility on this project, Ted. The way things sit right now, you stand to inherit all of the blame and none of the credit, depending on how things turn out.
Moore still couldn't decide if Castillo was maneuvering to gain control of this project by creating churn or trying to bail entirely through the same tactic. The way this clusterfuck was developing, it could be either one. Well, no matter. For better or worse, Moore had the con, and it would stay that way. He stood and nodded to Castillo.
Until then, Admiral, we have our job, and they have theirs.
With a parting salute that would never pass military muster, Admiral Moore headed for his office.
40. It hits the fan.
Once again, Dr. Karin Lakkonen, the ICDC director, was on the vid, looking straight into the cameras with a fierce expression. Her prepared statement had contained all the standard disclaimers and non-explanations. Now, she was taking questions.
Dr. Lakkonen, given the increasing unrest around the world, isn't it time to come clean? Is there or is there not an alien infection?
There is not. We have one crew member who was injured in some kind of accident. No virus, bacterium, or other biological pathogen, terrestrial or alien, has been detected. No other crew member has succumbed to any similar effect.
Then why is the ICDC involved, Doctor?
The captain of the mining vessel was unsure of the circumstances, and in an abundance of caution, requested our presence and a quarantine. It is our mandate to respond to all such incidents.
Why is the quarantine still active, then?
We have not ruled out a non-biological basis for the injury, such as a toxic agent of some kind.
But surely that's not within the ICDC's purview.
Our staff are on site. They are, for better or worse, part of the quarantine. Since they are as skilled and well-trained as anything that another agency could field, they might as well be useful.
The reporter, unable to make a dent in the official patter, sat. Another reporter immediately stood.
Doctor, we've gotten hold of a list of specialists who've been consulted on this situation. Cybernetics? Xenobiology? Xenoepidemiology? Is that even a thing? How do these apply to the mundane circumstances that you are trying to portray?
We don't second-guess our field staff, sir.
Okay, Doctor, let's try this. Is there evidence that this thing is alien in origin?
Technically, we don't have enough information to rule it out.
But you do have enough information to rule out a purely terrestrial source?
For the first time, Lakanen hesitated. Ivan understood the rules as well as everyone else. She couldn't lie outright. If she did, she would be done as a media spokesperson. But misdirection was okay.
Opinions are still split on that question.
The reporter scanned his notes for a moment, then sat down. Another reporter stood, instantly recognizable. Roberta Harrison from Topic Zero was generally considered to be equal parts piranha and pitbull when pursuing a story, and it was significant that she was part of today's scrum. She consulted her tablet for a moment, then looked up at Dr. Lakanen. Her expression could best be described as a predator considering how best to disembowel its prey.
Dr. Lakanen, isn't it true that your crew member is suffering from considerably more than a mere injury? In fact, isn't he or she in the process of being converted into something completely non-human? And didn't the agent responsible for this transformation, in fact, try to eat the mining ship? Isn't that really why everyone is in quarantine? Because there is a real, credible danger of an alien presence that could bring the literal gray goo scenario to pass.
Uh-oh. Looked like rumors of a leak of some kind had just graduated to something more solid. He didn't envy Dr. Narang's boss at that moment. In fact, Lakanen looked stunned. She obviously had not expected to have that particular narrative dumped on her. However, the rules hadn't changed.
Miss Harrison, I don't know where you get your information from, but what you are proposing is inflammatory and sensationalist. I will not be party to such a discussion.
With that, Dr. Lakanen picked up her tablet and walked out of the press room. Well, that was fun. Ivan shook his head in awe. But I don't think she pulled off the save. In fact, the press room was seething with yelled questions, threats, and promises of repercussions, not all from reporters. Things had definitely just hit the fan. Dear Judy, I'm sure you've seen the news. How could you miss it? Love, this is exactly the kind of event I was worried about. Now everyone is going to be looking for the names and addresses of the crew of the mystery ship. If they connect the dots, they'll come after you and the children. Please, get away as soon as you can. Don't give notice. Just go. Find a new place and sign under your sister's name. Pull the kids out of school. Hell, we can afford tutors in a year or so to bring them up to speed. I'm concerned about calls from the base being traced. But I'll talk to you soon, if I can. Love, Ivan. 41. Putting it in perspective.
Hello, Ivan. How are you holding up?
Ivan turned to see Dr. Narang at the window.
Doing okay, Doc. I've been getting caught up on all the vid programs that I've missed for the last, well, all my life.
Dr. Narang chuckled.
Yes, a little bit of boredom sounds nice compared to everything that's going on groundside.
She hesitated.
Ivan, you know that the media outed the situation here.
Yeah. I saw the session where Harrison sprang it on your boss. They haven't gotten our names, have they?
No. Although, at this point, we are not discounting the possibility. Have you talked to your family about it? There are threats now. If personal details ever got out, they could be in danger.
We took steps early on, Doc. It always seemed like an inevitability, you know. Narang nodded.
That's good. I'm going to talk to the crew next. I hope they've already done something as well, but if not, I think they'll have to consider it a priority.
What's going on, Doc? What have I missed?
It's not something you missed. I have the inside line both because I'm ICDC and because Admiral Moore keeps me updated. I get the impression he's trying to frighten me more than inform me sometimes, but I might be biased.
She hesitated.
To the point, though. This whole thing has mobilized extremists of all stripes. Riots, sabotage, incidents of what I suppose are terrorism, are becoming more frequent on Earth. The Miners Guild headquarters in Detroit was firebombed last night.
Because I'm a miner? That's a stretch.
It doesn't have to make sense, Ivan.
She got up, gave him a sympathetic look.
I just wanted to let you know.
He watched her until she turned a corner and was out of sight. Outstanding. This just gets better, doesn't it? If ever there'd been any doubt, this settled it. He could never be associated with his family again. This wasn't going to go away. It wasn't going to get better. Even if by some miracle he was somehow cured, whatever that might mean, the nut jobs wouldn't accept that he was no longer a danger. They'd never stop until he'd been found and eliminated. It was time to accept reality. He would do whatever it took to keep his family safe, including never going near them again. 42. In the news. Seth watched the vid, his eyes getting larger and rounder. Burning buildings, police in riot gear being slowly pushed back as rioters advanced, throwing rocks, bricks, and burning objects. Every so often, the program cut to a view of ICDC headquarters, taken at an angle that ensured the viewer would make the connection and could read the protesters' placards. What are you hiding? Are they already dead? ICDC replaced by pod people? This is the end times. Prayer is the only solution. Humans first. No more lies.
What exactly do these people want the ICDC to do?
Aspasia asked from the next table. Take it back? Make it so it didn't happen? Say it ain't so? Seth glanced at her and shrugged. Take your pick.
But...
Look, Spazzy, you're a big girl, Ten said. People throw food riots when there's no food, housing riots when there's no housing, because if you blow a fit, someone will make it all better. That's the theory, anyway.
Seth agreed. Ten could be a pain, but sometimes he managed to really hit the nail right on the thumb.
Yeah. So... This group doesn't like the idea that there are extraterrestrials out there. Not sure why, but if they have a public conniption, maybe it'll turn out to have been a big joke.
You guys need to pay a little more attention.
Everyone turned to look at Lita Generis. Her face was drawn and tired.
This peaceful demonstration was organized by the fundamentalist church of We're Always Right. Apparently the idea that there are ETs out there conflicts with creationist beliefs. Who knew? Anyway, surprise, surprise, it got out of control.
Ten frowned.
How's that different from what I said?
Lita smiled at him, shook her head, and went back to her tablet.
I think I heard about similar demonstrations in the Middle East,
Ten added.
Same motive, I think.
Well, not all religions are up in arms about it.
Lita looked up from her tablet again.
The Church of the Return, for instance.
Seth made a face.
Who's got the what now?
It's new. Apparently whoever built our nanites are the same aliens who invented people and built the pyramids. They're coming back to take the faithful back to the Pearly Gates, which is a space station or something.
Seth covered his face and groaned.
Oh, yes,
Lita continued.
They congregate on mountaintops and hills, build huge fires to attract the starships, and run around wearing tinfoil hats.
You're kidding.
I wish I was.
The news coverage switched to a different topic. The reporter was interviewing someone who was wearing camouflage and carrying a military-looking rifle.
What the hell?
Grabbing the remote, Seth hit volume. The vid's sound system filled the room.
Sir, we are worried about whether the aliens are returning gods or demons or whatever. We're simply getting ready for the possibility that they might, purposefully or accidentally, unleash a plague on us. My understanding is that the quarantined ship has a disease on board. There are rumors that the crew were all turned to goo.
Oh, friggin' hell, Ten muttered. Preppers.
Well, it's a simple series of jumps from there are nanites to gray goo scenario to it actually happened.
Lita shrugged.
Did someone actually release that information?
Seth asked.
No.
Everyone turned at the last statement to look at the observation window. Dr. Narang stood on the other side, holding the microphone.
We are still trying to put together a news release that won't cause the apocalypse. It's beginning to look, though, like the delay is worse than a hasty statement would be. We don't know how details got out. Navy intelligence is working on it.
Lita put down her tablet.
Based on that last interview, it looks like lack of information is just leaving room for speculation to spiral out of control.
Our feeling as well. We are going to squirt what we have to the UEN by end of day, and they can do what they want from there. The president will probably make a statement within 24 hours.
Jesus. Seth drained his coffee and got up. He placed his mug in the dishwasher tray. The small mech grabbed the item and began to wash it, frantically. Seth watched the furious activity for a moment, certain that the device was glaring at him, then headed for his room. Seth stared at the ceiling, hands behind his head. All this because Ivan couldn't keep his hands to himself.
No, that's not fair. I'm beginning to sound like Ten.
But Ten did have a point. Ivan didn't have to reach for the stupid damn thing. Seth grimaced. The thought made him feel vaguely ashamed. The fact that he hadn't phoned Ivan just to say hi, even more so. Before he could have second thoughts, Seth picked up the phone and dialed. Ivan picked up the phone before the second ring. Hello?
Hi, Ivan. It's Seth.
Ivan sat up. A phone call from any of the crew was an event.
Hey, how are things over there?
Things are tense, to be honest.
Because of me?
Because of the quarantine. Some people can't separate the two in their minds.
Got it.
The thing is, Ivan...
Seth hesitated, and Ivan waited silently.
The thing is, the doctors are talking about when and how we'll get out of quarantine. The nanites are apparently pretty easy to detect, so once they've got a good procedure set up to ensure we're clean, we're out of here, but...
Again, the hesitation.
When we ask about you, they dodge the question, or they just don't answer.
They can't, Seth. It's not a case of just getting rid of a few nanites. There's no me left.
Yeah, but that's just it. No one wants to push the issue here. When they open the doors, we'll leave, and no one feels good about that or wants to talk about it. Well, maybe Ten, but you can't be sure of anything with him.
Survivor's guilt?
Sort of, I guess. Everyone feels like we should be doing something. We're just not sure what.
Ivan was silent for a moment, choosing his words. Seth, I understand. And there really isn't anything anyone can do. Except maybe make sure the military doesn't dissect me as soon as you leave. I think that's my biggest fear.
Well, the captain has that covered, and most of us have offered to help. If the costs get too out of control, then the captain reminded us that he owns 15 shares of Big Rock. He really doesn't need help with the bills.
So, if we are filthy rich for life, he's...
Yeah, like that.
Ivan hesitated. He wanted so much to tell Seth about some of the things he was learning, about his new abilities, but he couldn't do that. He'd dropped hints of things to Dr. Kemp in a moment of weakness and might have put him in danger. He wasn't going to repeat that with his friend.
Thanks for being honest with me, Seth. And tell the guys not to worry. They have their lives to live. My family is taken care of, so I'm good.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself.
Ivan hung up the phone. Funny. The world seemed less lonely now. He lay back on his bunk. And what about that whole question? What would he do if the military decided to cart him off to the backside of the moon and take him apart? Could he even do anything? Would he be better off dead? Would his family be better off if he was dead? And what if it turned out the computer was here to pass on the secrets of FTL, immortality, infinite energy, and universal peace? He'd be quite the putz if he sabotaged that, wouldn't he? The same questions as ever. Round and around and around, but no answers. Yet. Ivan had always prided himself on being analytical, a necessary quality for a computer guy. For all the despair that colored his world at the moment, he wouldn't check out until he knew for sure it was for the best.
43. Reconsiderations. The officers grouped around the table looked up as Moore came into the room. He stopped to examine each person and do a quick threat analysis. The last meeting had been fractious, and he'd only hinted at the possibility of unorthodox operations. Today would be, well, harder. He sat, took a moment to review his notes, and looked up.
Sirs, we have a problem. Multiple problems, really. You've all seen the news. I'm sure you're getting regular recaps from your staff. It's in the shit on Earth, but good. We've tracked down the source of the leak, by the way, and there's a court-martial in someone's future, but that doesn't help us now.
Presumably you have a suggestion that will help us, Castillo said.
Moore didn't appreciate the sarcasm.
Since you ask, yes. It may become necessary for us to cure the alien infection in a very public manner. Civil unrest is at a level not seen since the events that led to the new liberation. The public wants a fix, and no half measures.
Castillo leaned forward, his antagonism forgotten.
Public manner implies that it might be more about presentation than reality?
Moore nodded.
That's right, Admiral. We implement your fail-safe strategy, then.
The nuke? You'll actually go through with it.
Gerard looked genuinely scared, and Moore felt a stab of contempt. How did that man ever get into a command position anyway?
That is correct. At some point, we will find ourselves needing to detonate it, presumably to prevent some kind of excursion or something. With regret, overwhelming danger, blah, blah.
And Pritchard? Asked Nevin.
Safely elsewhere.
Nevin shook her head. We talked about this before. The man has rights, and you know as well as I that in this political environment a judge would come down on the side of a citizen by default.
Yes, Commodore, I keep up on current affairs too, though technically we aren't impinging on those rights, at least not to any extent greater than is already imposed by the quarantine.
He won't be chained to a wall. He'll just be in a different facility, which will be safer for him and for us, and for the public in general.
His family...
We'll never see him again, face to face, in any case. And we can, if it seems feasible, make some kind of arrangement in that area. His family right now is in considerable danger if Mr. Pritchard's identity becomes public. Why don't we ask him what he'd prefer?
Moore gave Nevin his best innocent look. She rolled her eyes, but silently conceded the point. 44. Interlude. Ivan turned off the vid. The computer had made it clear that information transfer needed to be two-way. In return for creating Ivan's picture shows, the computer expected to watch the news for an equal amount of time. Seemed fair, and it wasn't as if the news was boring. Ivan lay back, his hands behind his head, and waited. It wasn't long in coming. He was getting emotional overtones now from the computer. Just the basic ones, fear, anger, hate. Today's lesson seemed to be about the galaxy's inhabitants. Owners? Maybe. And at least one group of galactic overlords had made the device that Ivan had triggered. Then, a catalog of obviously artificial beings, although not done out in chrome. The accompanying emotion was fear. So, robots bad. This would not bode well for Ivan, except that when Ivan drew a picture of himself as a robot, he got a sense of negation. Was he then grouped with the chrome beings? The weird thing was that the chrome things looked like animals, or, well, statues of animals. Had they gone through the same process as he did? Did that mean they were sentient? Was he looking at a catalog of intelligent species? It was confusing and slow going. One of the more interesting images consisted of a bunch of the artificial beings descending on Earth and a bunch of dishwasher mechs flying out to meet them. Besides the obvious problem that dishwashers couldn't fly, the meeting seemed to be peaceful, maybe even joyous. So the artificial life forms were coming to free the dishwashers? That couldn't be right. Then suddenly a single word formed in his head. War. Well, that was good. It meant that verbal communication was possible, at least in principle. The bad news was the choice for that first word. Most likely it wasn't coincidence. Then a bunch of chrome Ivans flew out and did battle with the Dishwasher Liberation Front. He couldn't keep from laughing. The computer was obviously seeing everything Ivan saw, including an old Avengers movie from the early 21st century that he had watched. The fighting was both over the top and physically impossible. But it raised some issues. Was Ivan part of the dishwasher oppression empire? There were definitely two groups, but no clear idea of motives or who were the good guys. If he'd still been human, Ivan was sure he'd have a headache by now. One thing was certain, this wasn't a straightforward good versus evil thing. The computer in his head might have humanity's best interests in mind, or it might just need more cannon fodder. Ivan would have to play this very close to the vest until he had some clarity on where the greatest danger lay. Communications continued to improve over the next several hours. Ivan lay on his bunk, staring at the ceiling, but not really seeing it. In his mind's eye, a three-dimensional representation of his room gave him details that he couldn't possibly have seen. The area under his bunk, spaces between the walls, and the wiring and plumbing conduits were as visible to him as if the walls had been made of glass. Glowing spots and trails indicated the positions of nanites on and in the walls. This ability had simply appeared out of nowhere. He didn't know if the computer had explicitly decided to give him this extra sense, or if it was simply a side effect of the improving communications. He and the computer still couldn't talk as such, but a pigeon had been established, consisting of pictures, emotional overtones, and occasional words whose definitions had been agreed upon. human, nanite, computer, and war. This last session had been about the nanites. Sort of. Mostly. The chrome animals that he'd been seeing were, if he understood correctly, sentient beings who had gone through the same process as he had, but voluntarily. The nanites could form any shape, any desired physiology, which meant that an actual decision had been made at some level that Ivan would continue to be shaped like a human being rather than a seven-tentacled land squid. I wonder if that's subject to appeal. If he could sense the nanites, perhaps they could sense him in some way. Ivan held his hand up in front of his face and stared at his fingers. Then he glanced at the surveillance camera. If he could really, actually morph, doing it on vid might not be in his best interests. How could a group of nanites make a beeline for the camera? A few seconds later, Ivan knew that the camera would show him simply lying there for as long as he wanted it to. Where had that knowledge come from? There'd been no voice. Words hadn't scrolled across his vision. Nevertheless, he was certain it was true. But it only took care of the immediate problem. Someone could still show up at the observation window at just the wrong time. Well, that was almost always Dr. Narang, and he was fairly sure she was off shift right now. Again, Ivan held his hand up. It was foolish, nothing more than wishful thinking. Or maybe not. As Ivan watched, his fingers slowly elongated. Okay, long enough. The stretching stopped. How about something a little more out there? Ivan put his hand down, closed his eyes, and concentrated. He felt what could only be described as resistance, then a feeling of relief or release. He opened his eyes and lifted his hand. Six fingers. Now that's just weird. Ivan carefully touched his thumb to each of five fingers in turn. He couldn't tell which was the new one, and his brain didn't seem to have any issues with the extra digit, which meant he wasn't using a piece-by-piece copy of his nervous system, but more of an emulation. More proof that there was very little left of actual Ivan. He put the hand down and concentrated again. Again he encountered a feeling of resistance, then relief. Ivan checked his hand again. Back to normal. So I do have some control of this thing. Should I mention this? He glanced at the camera. Admitting what he'd done with his hand would lead to the thing he'd done with the camera. Pretty sure that wouldn't be taken well. By this point, he'd failed to mention so many things that it would be extremely difficult not to come out looking guilty as hell. It was hard. On the one hand, he should be honest and forthcoming, as becomes a good citizen and cooperative patient. On the other hand, there really wasn't a scenario where he came out of this cured. Or free. Or alive, really. Any information that he volunteered would just make him appear more alien. Simple self-interest said he should keep his mouth shut. Ivan breathed a quiet sigh, then smiled, amused. In order to do that, he had taken his first breath in, what, hours? Certainly since the last time he'd talked to someone. And that was getting more infrequent. The doctors, of course, gave orders and asked questions, but those weren't really conversations in any real sense. Attempts to talk to the crew were uncomfortable at best. Seth was embarrassed. Some, like Tan or KD, were actively hostile. And, of course, isolated in his own section of the module, Ivan couldn't just walk over to the common area and say hi. Ivan thought about phoning Judy again, but the last time had been so difficult. She'd cried, then she'd put the kids on the phone, then they'd cried. Ivan had wanted so much to cry as well. He'd hung up after promising to call again, then curled up on his bunk. Even sleep was no longer available as an escape. He was overdue to call again, and he dreaded it every bit as much as he longed to hear her voice. What would he say?
What would he tell her? Ivan was a dead man walking. The emails were hard enough, dealing with the pleas for more information, for a promise or even a hint that he'd be coming home soon. The last email from Judy had included short vids of his children saying hi to their father. He had wanted to scream, to tear up his room. Really, the only company he had were the visitors in his head, and they were looking more like unwelcome tenants. But whatever was in there, it had a plan of some kind, and that plan did not necessarily have the best interests of the human race in mind. Ivan got the impression that direct defiance would result in him being switched off, and the computer would simply pursue its mission without human interaction. But he could cooperate while pursuing his own agenda. He would keep his family safe. He could do this one last thing for them. 45. Retrieval. Admiral Moore sat, elbow on his desk and chin in hand, staring at the images on his tablet. An ache in his neck told him that he'd been in that position for too long. The Navy ship Gambit had arrived at the asteroid where the anomaly was discovered and was sending back pictures and data. The crew reported that they'd found both the arm from Pritchard's suit and the anomaly itself. Communications round-trip time was up around 40 minutes at the moment, making any kind of conversation impossible. Moore split his attention between reading the reports as they came in and preparing a list of questions to send back. Admiral Castillo walked in.
"Hi, Ted. I saw the images."
He sat down across the desk and crossed his legs.
"Uh-huh. They've created the suit arm using an industrial glass lining, but frankly I don't expect any activity, given what Dr. Narang has learned. The artifact is much more interesting."
"Artifact?"
Admiral Castillo's eyebrows climbed his forehead.
"Not anomaly anymore?"
"No. It's definitely man-made. Constructed by intelligence. It's artificial. Relatively simple design, actually, given the advanced technology evident in the nanites."
"So, I guess we can rule out the Sino-Soviet Empire."
Moore nodded.
"Alan, if the SSE had the technology to pull off even a fraction of what we've seen, we'd already be calling each other comrade and participating in self-criticism sessions."
"Which leaves aliens as the default explanation. Peachy, have our people figured out the purpose of the thing?"
"The squints on the Gambit did some preliminary analysis. The artifact is designed to squirt out something when touched. It's basically a mousetrap. The device is powered by a chemical reaction. Totally inert substances, until they're mixed. Analysts say that it's the only way to ensure a working mechanism over long time scales."
"Long time scales?"
"The analysts are talking about hundreds of thousands up to millions of years. Something based on maintaining tension, like a spring, would eventually deform due to metal fatigue, or lose elasticity and crack or something. The chemical setup is specifically designed to not degrade over geological time scales." "Do you find that frightening? I do."
"Which means this wasn't set up for us."
"Right. It was put in place for whatever came along, which turned out to be us, but could just as easily have been intelligent raccoons."
"Been watching old movies?"
"I blame Narang. She made an offhand reference, and it got me curious."
"Did you read the transcript from the conversation between Pritchard and Kemp?"
"Yes. Just reinforces my feeling that we're dealing with something very old and very patient."
"It also reinforces the danger that we are either no longer dealing with a human being, or soon won't be. Gerard talked about the burden of proof being on you, Ted. That transcript will go a long way toward providing that proof."
Moore stared at Castillo, eyebrows climbing his forehead. It was a good point, but the man was likely leading up to something.
I understand you are having some difficulty selling the idea of strapping a nuclear device to the quarantine hab. Castillo continued. The nuclear option would be more palatable, I think, if the isolation ward were a little farther from Earth. Maybe outside the treaty zone? I wonder if we could arrange to tow it out of the Earth-Moon system entirely. Perhaps a solar orbit. Just an offhand thought, of course. Castillo shrugged without further comment, nodded to him, and departed. Castillo had made a good point, although perhaps not the point he had intended. NAVCOM was not enthusiastic about the nuclear failsafe. Moore regretted bringing it up at all. In fact, in the vein of permission versus forgiveness, he'd have been better off to simply go ahead with it. Live and learn. He could submit the request again with the alteration proposed by Castillo, or he could assume permission, given that the proximity to Earth had been a major theme in the refusal. Unbelievable. It was as if no one else took the threat seriously. With a sigh and a shake of his head, Moore picked up his tablet and went back to the report from the Gambit. The report included a good deal of routine data, but some observations about the rock's surface were puzzling. Moore sat up straighter in his chair and paged back and forth a few times. Then he buzzed Bentley.
Sir?
Bentley? Any supporting documents to go along with what you've given me?
Some images and raw footage, sir, but all the text has been forwarded as is.
See if there are any images of the equipment scarring on the rock's surface. Forward anything you find to me immediately.
Aye, sir.
Moore turned off the intercom and sat back, staring into space. Piton holes. Drag marks from cabling. Chemical discoloration, possibly from burning rocket fuel nearby. Why would the Mad Astra have attached Rivas to the rock? He attached a list of questions for follow-up.
46. Press release.
Ivan turned to the channel that Dr. Narang had suggested, adjusted the volume, and tossed the remote onto his bedside table. The vid showed a couple of talking heads discussing their predictions about the president's upcoming address. Picking up the remote, Ivan muted the vid. He'd never understood why vid people needed to tell you what you were about to see, tell you what you were seeing, then tell you what you'd just seen. Maybe they were paid by the word. He closed his eyes for a moment and extended his senses. Nanites formed thin lines around the walls, floor, and ceiling of his room. Another line extended itself toward the airlock. He could vaguely sense the outlines of the corridor through the nanites. The doctors and technicians were watching carefully for any attempted breakout of nanites, of course, but they weren't set up to detect wandering nanites that politely kept to his side of the airlock. By this point, Ivan had every corner of the isolation ward covered by nanite surveillance. He was reluctant to cross that last line in the sand, lest he bring down the military on him. It was a safe bet they had a contingency plan, and it probably wasn't pleasant. However, if it got to the point where Ivan needed to leave in a hurry, he would be prepared. Ivan looked up as the president of the United Earth Nations came on screen, the UEN symbol emblazoned behind him. He quickly unmuted the vid. The president played with something on the lectern, probably a tablet with his speech notes, then looked straight into the camera.
My fellow citizens, there has been considerable speculation lately about an extraterrestrial disease being contained at the LaGrange 4 naval base. Very damaging rumors have spread, prompting acts of desperation, panic, and violence. The UN Council has found it advisable, therefore, to lay out the true facts of the case.
As opposed to the false facts? Ivan smiled, despite a growing case of nerves.
First, Let me state that there is indeed a quarantined ship under study at the naval base. The crew discovered something while prospecting in the asteroid belt. Let me assure you that, contrary to rumors, no one has died. To the extent the scientists and doctors of the ICDC have been able to determine, there is no communicable disease.
Technically true, Ivan thought, but only if you omitted certain details.
What the artifact does show, with 100% certainty, is that we are not alone in the universe. And let me be clear about this, we discovered an artifact only. The technology is advanced, but it is only technology. There is no alien being held captive at Lagrange 4. There is no invasion fleet bearing down on us.
Wow. Ivan began to wonder if absolutely everything that came out of a politician's mouth was such cleverly constructed BS. In all fairness, no, most of it wasn't clever.
What we do have is an opportunity. An opportunity to carefully study a technology far in advance of ours. An opportunity to bootstrap ourselves to the next level. Our scientists have reported, for instance, that the technology appears to be able to draw power from the very fabric of space. Imagine a world where all of our energy needs could be met with no danger of pollution, waste heat, fallout, or contamination. I urge you all to see this not as a situation to be feared, but as an opportunity to enrich ourselves.
Ivan stared at the screen. As the president continued to talk, his words carrying less and less content as the rhetoric ratcheted up. Finally, he finished and prepared to take questions. Given the not-quite-truths in the speech, Ivan doubted that the Q&A would be a masterpiece of candor. Sighing, he aimed the remote and changed the channel. He was distracted by a rush of images and emotions. The computer seemed to be reacting to the president's speech. The artificial life forms were still descending on Earth, and the dishwashers were still happy to see them, but the computer seemed to be adding politics to the mess. Now the conflict was expanding to other star systems, with different groups of artificial beings doing battle with different groups of chrome animals. There were alliances, victories, defeats. The only constant seemed to be that dishwashers and artificials stuck together, and the chrome animals stuck together. In addition, chrome animals absorbed non-chrome animals, while the artificials wiped them out. If this had been going through his mind before his transformation, Ivan would have suspected he was stoned. Since hallucinogens probably didn't work on nanites, he'd have to go with the idea that this was a deliberate message. Was it a war? Was the computer trying to save humanity from something? Was something coming? 47. Anomalies. Dr. Narang looked up at the knock. Her office in the isolation module qualified for the title only because it contained a desk and chair. Without even a door or hatch, this being Navy property, her privacy was more symbolic than actual. Dr. Samuelson shook his hand in the air briefly. Knocking on the metal wall, the only viable option, was painful. He sat down in the only other chair, folding his lanky frame into the small space and resting his elbows on his knees. Narang pulled a folder from the basket icon on the corner of her tablet's screen.
All right, Henry. I've scanned through your report, although I haven't had time for a full read, but it doesn't look like there are any surprises.
Samuelson's eyes goggled.
How quickly we get blasé. The report is nothing but surprises.
Narang gave him a tired smile.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess. In summary, we have completely and utterly failed to infect anything else, living or otherwise.
we have completely failed to detect any trace of nanites in any of the other crew. The nanites show no propensity.